Welcome, everybody, to Real Deal Media's After Hours, an original series right here at Real Deal Media that is no agenda driven, no script, no limits, and no regrets. Hence the title of tonight's episode, Silent Regrets, which became very loud regrets and then very even just louder expletives. This is our take two here. If you're just joining us, we just got taken down by Rumble, and I was about to take us on a philosophical extravaganza of a journey. And now I'm thinking I just might make the show and just about things that just really piss me off. That's where I think I'm going tonight. I can't help myself. I have no control. I'm like a Ferrari with no brakes sometimes. And that's how I feel. Yeah, Rumble, that has been just the thorn in just everybody's side, as well as social media, if I might add. Yeah, there's a lot of things that just, you know, the older you get, just you find out the more things just piss you off, and the people are just around you that are just extras in this movie. For instance, you know, why is it that construction people either have to listen to mariachi music, that is the shittiest music ever on the face of Earth? Mm-hmm. Yeah, no wonder all the Mexicans come to the U.S. because they have to listen to mariachi music until you realize mariachi music is everywhere they go. Or the other option is classic rock. You're probably saying, Dean, classic rock is great. What are you talking about? I'm not disputing that. But classic rock radio sucks almost as much as Rumble does for me sometimes. But let me just explain before we go on our just fantastic voyage here tonight. You know, you hear classic rock radio. It's the same damn songs. It's Wheel in the Sky by Journey. It's, you know, just Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer, which I hate Bon Jovi for that. And it's Tom Petty, and then just repeat, recycle, rinse, and do it again. So that's what you hear just in life everywhere. Life is filled with mariachi music and Bon Jovi. If I had to tell the youth what to look ahead, you know, and expect when you become an adult, it's just that mariachi music that just wants to make you kill yourself, and Living on a Prayer for the millionth time in your life. And it never ends. I went to Wales, England once in the middle of nowhere to a little corner shop to buy a jacket. And the guy found out I was American. And he said to me, can I tell you a secret? And I said, do I have a choice? Okay, what is it? He said, Bon Jovi's God. This happened in real life. And that phrase, that kind of mindset has followed me everywhere I go when I meet just people in general. So that's the kind of day I've had. And then, then you get taken down. You work hard, and you have gremlins that are invisible. And I hate gremlins, too. In fact, I even think I hate the movie, too. Just if we're going to be getting into things, just I just absolutely despise, hate, just disdain for. But tonight, I'm going to try to get back on track. So please forgive me if you have it in your heart. If not, then, well, that's just life. This is an original series. If you're new to Real Deal Media, we do a plethora of shows. This is one of them, and it's a philosophical, introspective look at the world, because the term silent regrets, and I'll kind of fill you in how I got to it, because we are seeing a ton of silent regrets on the world stage, on the middle stage, backstage, and maybe even backseat too, while we're at it. Yeah, just to let you know. And we're broadcasting. I don't care where we're broadcasting. If we're somewhere, find us. We're everywhere. I'm everywhere, but I'm nowhere at all. Like that song, Nowhere Man. I'm on every platform. You just can't find me or see me. That's just how special I am, because I've always wanted to be the Invisible Man. I thought that was the greatest superhuman power you could ever achieve. Just be the Invisible Man until it actually happens to you and you become the Invisible Man. You're like, wait a minute. I just want to be heard. I want to be seen. I want to know how to measure success. You know? Yeah, that's what it is. But we're facing algorithms and just dictatorship from Silicon Valley. And these people need to get the Hammer Time treatment. You know what that is? You know what the Hammer Time treatment is? You ever seen the movie Casino? You know what they do to you in casinos when you get caught cheating with like a little card up your sleeve? You know what they do to you? Let me tell you what they do to you, because I've been in the underground of some of these hotel casinos, and it's a whole different world there. And there are still mob bosses. You know what they do? They get your hand. They say, sir, follow me, please. You're like, oh, why? What's going on here? I didn't know. Just follow me. We have a present for you. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll go. They said, put your hand on the table. I'm like, okay, put your hand on the table. They go, just like that. They bash your hand open. Your bones fall everywhere. And your hair goes everywhere too. And you learn that you never, ever want to screw with the pit boss. I lived in Vegas 3 years, and that's how it goes. And that's what we need to do to certain people that piss us all off and piss on our party. And we have fought for the right to party, if they haven't heard, if you don't know by now. But that's what you have to fight for: freedom and party. Or parting and freedom. It depends on your ritualistic order there. That's what needs to happen. But then we go back into what I call now silent regrets. So let me get into this. There's a lot of people who have the most cliche of novelty statements you'll ever hear in your life. And I don't need a list to tell you, because they're ingrained and tattooed in my head. Let me share this with you. And you'll see this. You'll probably see it now in the live chats. If you're reading that, some of you don't, or it's replay. It doesn't matter. I'm not looking anywhere. In fact, I should just be blindfolded right now. That's how just invisible I feel, but that's how great I feel too at the same time. You may have seen the following statements, phrases, uniquely just individualistic kind of theories and realizations from people. Following, they're all in on it. Okay, great. How do you know? Wait, don't tell me, because I already know. I don't trust this person. Never give up, but never say never, too. Never say never. But you just said never. So how am I supposed to never say never if you're my role model, or if I'm supposed to listen to you? Never say never. Here's one that used to be full of value and worth. If you work hard, you can achieve anything. If you work hard, you can achieve anything. Let me examine that for a minute. If you work hard, you can achieve everything. Well, I've worked hard. Other people are working hard. People who maybe run for office work hard and, you know, go door to door, and you can achieve anything is not really on the menu anymore, because to achieve everything and anything, you almost have to cheat and destroy the pit boss, as that early example I gave you. So this is what they don't teach you. So, for instance, when I went to college, I was a broadcast journalism major. I was an editor and writer for the college paper for about 2 years. Until I brought some heat on myself. That's a whole nother story, and you wouldn't believe it. Even back then, scandals followed me. But you work hard, and then you learn the trade. So you go from newspaper to everything like you would see in a newsroom. And so I did that. I did my own show. I did a food show. It was rather interesting. And I did all these things. You worked hard. And then what they never taught you back then is, well, you can put some elbow grease in it and do your finest job, but at some point in time, there's going to be an invisible algorithm who is from the pits of hell, who is going to pretty much destroy, undermine everything that you do, but you won't know it. See, this was never taught. And back then, the idea, the term, the phrase, even the mention of censorship was always a thing of the 1940s, somewhere in Germany. Not necessarily Munich, but you know what I mean. And so what I realized then is where I'm sitting now is roughly in the same bracket in generation of maybe where some of the early rock and rollers began And my example of that is when you saw and heard about the Chuck Berrys, the Little Richards, the Elvises, all those people in the 50s, there was no reference point of how to be a rock and roll person. Meaning that was the first generation of that type of musician. So here we are, here I am, here you are, here I am, and here we are together. So there's people in this industry that the Alex Jones types, the Mike Adams types, and those that are a little older than me, but they started this multimedia thing, and there was no reference to how it's done. So there's people that are a little bit before me. So I'm part of this new onslaught of this generation that we're figuring this out as we go. And it's exciting, it's thrilling, and it's death-defying, and it's frustrating. It's also confusing. And so there's all these things that I'm now putting together. So with that said, do I have silent regrets? Because a lot of people who do have regrets don't tell you. What they do is they double down, triple down, quadruple down, and then get militant about it. And we are seeing this on the world stage as well. So when people say, I have no regrets, well, that's not entirely true. We kind of do, but they're silent. So the world stage regretters are very dangerous because they were promised backing, protection from a big body of corporatist, communist, but don't tell anyone kind of people. They were sold a bag of... well, things, somebody might know out there, but they were sold a bag of goods that were just a utopian model of a digital age where we're going to be the serfs, the under pedestrian types, and they were going to be the digital monarchy, if you will. So this was sold to these people as they were getting abused growing up too. And some of these guys getting abused growing up were getting abused in the same ritualistic fashion that mink coats are made. And I don't know if I have to explain that to you, but it's an electrocution from a southern border that you can do the math on. So their regrets now are very silent and painstaking. And so to procure that is they're doing scorched earth, kind of a antidote on all of us to make us pay for their foolish, stupid, idiotic, moronic, satanic, regretful decisions. And that's where we are. That's where we are. And so, you know, my regret is that we're rather silent, but now vocal, is that I never saw this truckload of infiltration, but the truckload of censorship and just how much little time we actually do have to correct something that is far off the map, far off the scale of the destination we thought we were going, where we should go, now that we're kind of rolling the dice, hoping the roulette table falls on that double zero green to get back where we thought we were going. And it's a difficult march to the top when you do want to rock and roll in a sense, but it is hard when you are the greatest minority in this world. And if you don't know what that is, it's the individual. And when you are the individual and you're not part of the collective, even the alternative collective that we all see, it is the hardest thing. But it's also the easiest thing when you're not trying to be different, when you're just being yourself, and the rest follows. You know, I think that in the early 90s, when Kurt Cobain was coming out of the woodworks of Seattle, I don't think Kurt Cobain said, well, if I just wear sweatshirts and some ratty old jeans that I was painting with on that one job, and I think that that will do that will do the magic. When it was really just, no, I don't want to just put Aquanet in my hair and put women's makeup on to look like a Bret Michaels just knockoff. it was the individualistic spirit of that animal, that human, that set the way in the path of what followed in that decade. In some regards, in some respects, I feel that same kind of trajectory, in a sense. Not that it was a target of mine, but when you're not going along with the collective. And I say that because I don't want to live with the silent regrets, but I don't want to follow the lemmings. I don't want to follow the protocol because it's not in my DNA to do so. And I'm reminded of that every time I see other, and I use the term loosely, but other shows out there. Because the term show, and we're going to be going all over the vernacular here, but the term show is often used, just like all these other cliche phrases, very loosely. You know, like if I told you, would you like to see a magic trick? And then I pulled my thumb off and told you, what do you think of this magic trick? Well, first of all, if you examine the words here in the English language, the magic trick, well, first, there's no magic here. There's no trick, but there's frustration and just annoyance. So that's not really a magic trick. So when I see the term shows or show, I have, you know, and I say to myself, well, that is one of the most fascinating, most glamorous Zoom calls I've ever seen. Oh, it was a show. I'm sorry. I thought I was eavesdropping. I thought this was a training exercise for my audition for the NSA. Was that a show? I'm sorry. Oh, I do apologize. No, I don't apologize. Anyways, but so these terms are used loosely, and a show is a presentation. And with presentation comes the objective, it comes the motive, and it comes the ultimately, it is the base of what you're trying to express. Expression is through art. Art is best displayed through a presentation, aka a show. And if we had Christmas without the wrappings, would it still be Christmas with no trees and out the gift wrappings? Would the economy tilt into a black hole at that point? Meaning, if there wasn't the pleasantries of those presentations, hence present, then I'm not sure it would be the same caliber of what the definition is supposed to be. So, as we were trying to figure this out, as we are kind of the first generation of people kind of doing this, we're bringing what we learned and have done and completed and achieved in the old world and bringing it to this new kind of frontier, if you will. There's a word I love, frontier. It's refreshing. The new frontier, I tell you. So, and it's dangerous. So when people realize, when they realize that you realize that they don't know what they're doing, then they get very violent. When a sociopath lures or tries to lure you into a trap, like a bear trap, and you don't go, and not only do you get the trap and just wrap it around their neck and snap it, because if you don't, they'll do it to you. Because you know why? Because they're so used to control through fear. But then when you take the fear, which is false evidence appearing real, and you make it a presentation of a knot, some say noose, but I don't want to say that. And you flip the script on those who are trying to do their offensive strike on you. They don't know what to do because the people who are the most offensive, the people who are the school bullies, the biffs of the world, only know how to play offense, have never had to play defense. The good people, the nice people, the girl next door, the nice boy from the church choir, the old man down the street, the old lady from Pasadena, they've only known how to play defense at best. More importantly, a lot of people are more of the bench players in this arena, full contact sport of a football game with no footballs, just razor blades. And that's where we're going. So the offense is the best defense. And I believe it was Mike Ditka that said that, the former Chicago Bears coach. I could be wrong, and I probably am, but it feels right because that's how to win this game. And we're waiting to play defense on many occasions. And that's kind of regretful, too. What we're doing now, it's almost like, could we have done this in 2019? Could we have done this in 2020? What were we waiting for? What's my problem? Why am I lethargic? Why am I procrastinating? Is there an importance to it? And I think there is. Oftentimes, there is. So here's another example, too, is why these people are doing the scorched earth is because they know what their destiny is. And I feel that I know what my destiny is, which their destiny is death, in case you know, you didn't fill in the blank. But and that's coming soon to a town square and a public square near you. But what is my destiny to, I often ask? What is my purpose? What has been my purpose? Did I miss the boat on the purposeful cruise? I often ask myself. And I'm not sure I can answer what my purpose is because it's still being written. It's still being written because I don't write the songs, so to speak. The songs write me. So I don't know this design for life and what it is ultimately supposed to be outside of, I don't have anyone that I'm supposed to impress, really, to show my report card to, and so to speak. Maybe you do out there. Maybe it's a significant other, a sibling, an offspring, a parent. For me, it's solely me in this world. So therefore, I do things not to have an acolyte wall of achievements, but I want a wall of memories that I can look at with enjoyment, because if I'm not enjoying something and I'm not creatively passionate about it, then why am I doing it? Therefore, I'd rather not do it. You know, if I were to be friends with somebody, I wouldn't want to be just friends of just, you know, in a 15-minute feature or less. And that's what it is. All in or all out. All in or all out. And that's how to survive this game, because this is a concrete jungle that's turning into the Hunger Games real fast. Real fast. And they're presenting it that way, too. You can go on any major news aggregation website over there in the United States, and with some of the biggest terms they'll show you right now is Civil War, the search related searchable terms, and how majority Americans want to secede from the Union, want their state to secede from the Union. Now, I find it very hard to believe that majority of Americans are being polled by the Drudge Report, for instance. I find that very hard to believe. What I do believe is that media, that film isn't a reflection of society, art imitating life. It's a projection on society, meaning they want to poke the sleepy giant called the grizzly bear, aka the American, to then fulfill their Albert Pike dreams of having the Third World War and this new world order come to life and bloom in bloom. Well, there's another Nirvana song. And it's the steadfast and the perseverance and the readiness and the grit and the true muscle of the true Americans and many people around the world, not just the Americans, but I can only speak because I'm here, allegedly. But it's just that, and to the strength who withhold, falling into that bear trap that I shared with you before. I guess, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, if they, the powers that be really wanted a civil war, if they really just, took over the airwaves and just blasted the Bon Jovi song, I think that would really just do it. And don't you think, now that I'm thinking about these things as I'm evolving here, it's just certain things like that. There's those triggers. That's one of them. There's a lot of triggers in this life. a lot of triggers and a lot of happy trigger fingers. And the cliche and novelty is wearing off many of us. And I think we've evolved past these terms. I think we evolved past the little clicks of the normalcy bias, of the normicons, of the little fun Tupperware parties, PTA meetings for just parents out there. Because what we're talking about here tonight, what we talked about last night and the night, I just got shocked, and the night prior to that, is a now considered a feasible and expected and totally okay conversation to have, aka dinner time conversations, because that's what it's all about. That's what the Revolutionary War was about, was these type of conversations before the actual kinetic physical elements of it came into play. Because you don't just walk into a ring to fight an opponent when you don't know who he is, how much he weighs, what are his weaknesses, how much blackmail does he have. Now you have the conversation to understand the enemy, because you'll be devoured by the enemy if you don't. Because the enemy understands me, understands you. They listen in. They're watching. They send people after you. They pay little saboteurs to find you or to talk to you. And it works both ways, because, you know, you play nice too long and then people want to just not play nice with you back. So these are some of the things that go through my head quite often. And if I don't address them, if I don't tackle them at a timely fashion, then it eats you up inside, and you start parroting everything that is provided to you in the allegories of life and the just feasible options that you can say is the right argument when it's really not. And I try to explain this, with what's happening in this. False flag scenarios that are going on. But I said this to somebody, and I'll share this with you, is when you have people that are watching you and, for the most part, enjoy, like, tolerate, but nonetheless are part of the framing of where you are, is you have the option to either argue with them, debate them, and in an emotional standpoint, or you have the option to showcase and present, as we go back to that term. And when you have an emotionally charged, by design, argument of the day, of the year, right in front of you, and you take that and then rebuttal it with more of emotions, which is not sweet emotion, but more of the nefarious or just kind of the dim response, then you're going to get that back, if not more. So if you can showcase what your articulation, where you're coming from, when you can showcase that, then you can change the hearts and the minds of people that might have been deemed different than you, adversaries of you, and give them a spark so they understand where you're coming from. And then it makes them think and look within, hopefully, unless they're dead inside. And there's a lot of dead inside people. In fact, I just read a story about a man in Germany that has taken, literally taken, about 200, I believe it was 200 bustiers from the miracle jabs, which he's taken about more than two dozen, and he's perfectly fine. Well, he's perfectly fine for a dead guy. Perfectly fine for a dead guy. And these are some of the things. And, we have a lot of people who are chiming in here as I'm... I think I'm on track here. I think we're live, and I think I'm okay with that. I can live with that, hopefully. Well, we have a lot of people here on Rumble. I will be looking around here. I'm feeling better now. I'm feeling better. My imaginary psychologist said, just let it all out, Dean, and try not to hurt anyone, and please don't bite anybody. I said, what am I, a dog? Okay, here's a wonderful comment here. Thank you. This is from Pete Ferriozzi. Thank you very much. This is a lovely comment. Says, the devil is the great divider. He wants to divide the left from the right, the red from the blue. He wants to divide all the races. That way he can control them better. Most people have forgotten we all had the same parents back in the Garden of Eden. The Garden of Eden, the Garden Divino. I keep thinking of that song. Yes, thank you, Pete. What a wonderful thing. Yeah, you know, that's what I was thinking. I was covering a Palestinian Israeli story the other night without all the pointing of fingers real quick. I was thinking to myself, you know, when you're born, you're not born with a Judaism religion, or you're not born as a, you know, Islamic, you know, infant. You're born as an innocent a child with a rampant and wild imagination and innocence. And at some point that's taken from us. And I was trying to pinpoint when that was taken from us. And I don't mean in the most nefarious kind of way or method, but I just mean, when does the responsibilities, the hardships of adulthood, when does that stem to just sink its way in? And I came up with a few things of when I think that it was lost. And I think for me, it came around junior high as I was trying to do this very retrospective look within. Because up until that point, I had, I grew up as an only child, adopted in the whole nine, but I didn't have a lot of people around me all the time. I had older people, but I had this wonderful creation of, I was always drawing, I was, coloring, painting, you know, wonderful things. And I had, you know, these army men and G.I. Joes and all that, which I made these very, just epic kind of films in my head with plots and storylines. And it was wonderful. And maybe it affected to what I do today, but that was an imagination. And when I discovered music, which I think the music that in education of it, that's been ripped out of this country, of the United States, maybe in Canada too, or in England, I'm not sure. When you take that option of a youth and that creativity out of them, then they become nothing but this cubicle slave that they have been grooming this generation to be, to never question, to go along and to get along, that you are guilty until proven slave, that to get ahead of life, you have to cheat the system, and then you have to pretty much cheat your fellow man and brother and sister, if I can use that term. You have to be rank and file of this darkness to achieve. So I think that's when I lost that. I don't want to say lost, but when it became on hold and apparent that, hey, no one's into these things that I'm still into. Why? And I retreated in, I dipped back from the collective, because I saw people back then from 12, 13 onward. Everyone around me I knew back then was complete and utter moron, stupid. You know how stupid boys are in high school, just to get girls' attentions. I mean, I remember one kid stapled his forehead to get girls' attention. And they said, oh, Kevin, are you okay? Oh, you're so funny. No, he was not funny. He was stupid. But that's, you know, this has probably been this way since the beginning of time. You know, probably the caveman, you know, like, hey, look at me, to the other cavewoman. Look at me. I'm sitting on a fire right now, but he's burning to death. And it didn't really sit well with me, because I was preparing for a bigger life that I wanted to create it to be part of, to create in. And I didn't go along to get along. And that is the definition of living as an individual. So the collectivism has creeped in and has gotten us to hate ourselves, to not believe we have power, to be very untrusting of everyone, to snitch on everybody, and to have a very darkened outlook of the future, which it's not hard to do. On some days, that happens for me, and usually those are called Mondays, but you get over that. You get over that. But anyways, if I haven't said, Pete, what a wonderful comment. See what it did? Let me go to Rumble here. Here we have it. DK, excuse me. D. Kaya says, mass formation psychosis. Thank you. Thank you. Sister psychosis. Yeah, that's right. And then they deem you crazy when you're the one that can see. So if you rewatch that film, They Live, with Rowdy Roddy Piper, who I had the just incredible pleasure of knowing in real life, a wonderful friend who was taken too soon, really. But what that film was about, as low budget as it was made, but it was about seeing. It was about stepping back and doing this, what we're doing here, to look within and study what we're doing, what we're projecting, because everybody's projecting, you know, everybody's projecting. From the moment we go outside and we're wearing this shirt that we think is going to really project how we're feeling today, or it's going to project that we don't want to be noticed. We want to be a little wallflower that is invisible. We want to be self-inflicted shadow banning in real time. And psychosis, it's the psychosis of that. But yeah, everybody's projecting, and you know, you are what you eat, you are what you wear, and what people, what the powers that be want us to be, is a uniform society as a model that was given to the far, far east in the Great Leap Forward, started in 1949 by a Central Intelligence place stooge called Mao Zedong, Mr. Chairman. That's the uniform society. They want obey, they want structure, they want conformity, they want collectivism manufactured from the corporatists, who are really the rodents. See, that's the one animal, that animal farm that George Orwell book never talked about, not to my knowledge. They talked about the pigs, and we know who those are. They talked about the sheep, the lambs, the rooster, all those, the cows, but they never spoke about the rodents, because the rodents are the hidden hand here. They're the henchmen, the cartels. Those are the rodents that get things done in the midst of night when you're sleeping, and they're sneaking in to get their little grubby, greasy rodent fingers everywhere. And those people wear suits. Those people wear doctor's outfits. They wear badges. They're called drug enforcement, agents. And they're called, you know, some of them are border patrols, or and we know pretty much 100% of them are the transportation security agents, the TSA, who are the slimiest, scummiest people, who always want to challenge me, which is the whole story. Which, you know, does any, this is what I hate about going to the airport. Yeah, the TSA. I said, sir, but keep your hands up, keep your hands up. And this is just procedure, sir. We have to make sure you don't have any kind of daggers or nunchucks in your pockets, that you might have a pocket between, you know, just your lower extremities there. I said, oh, good. Thanks for keeping. And as I'm doing this, because I'm usually bitching at the airport, you'll hear people say, this goes into the conformity. You'll hear people say, oh, I've heard it many times. Thank you, officer. They call them officers. Thank you, officer, for keeping us safe. Don't let him get away with it. And I'm looking, I say, I can't believe this. You're wanting more tyranny. This happens to me every time. And so I get the pat down. And then I said, you know, I understand you're looking for weapons. But for me, I said, how do I know you don't have a weapon? Do you mind if I touch you for a minute? And that's where it gets weird. And I said, what is wrong with mutual touching? It's the greatest expression of safety. And where's my applause? Why am I a rebel with no applause? I always ask. But see, they don't seem like them, because they don't see. They don't have the glasses here. They're not this effective audience from around the world, are they? And that's how I feel. Here's another one here. Love this statement here. And I'm due for a break, because I'm my voice is, I need some water, some H2O, some agua fria. See, I know Spanish. Here's Mr. Simmons Farm. Mr. and Ms. Simmons Farm. It says a following. I know this is hard to walk through this darkness. The more you find out, it feels like you're going crazy. Then you realize everything in memory that you did or didn't do to get you to at this very moment puts you ahead of the curve. Well, thank you very much, Simmons Farm. Thank you very much. You know, it's what we do, what we talk about. It's, you know, some of these stories, the big ones in the old days would be huge for like an entire year. But when that's like every day, you start becoming desensitized, and then you can use this term. Then the thrill is gone, so to speak, and you find yourself that you are this wonderful just creation of, you know, almond preline with swirls of caramel and sea salt. And then next thing you know, you turn into French vanilla. Then you turn into just the factory store brand vanilla ice cream. And that's what you start reverting back to. And I can't do that. It's not in my DNA. It's not in my constitution. I would be ashamed of myself if I died tomorrow. And the people and family that died before me would be ashamed as well. And as they should be. So I can't be wholesome and bland. I can't be bran flakes. I can't be grape nuts, but I can only be the unique human creation that the creator, the artiste, made us to be. That's the individual. But I'm going to take a quick break here as my angelic voice is slowly fading into the oblivion here. I'll be back after this quick break. You're watching After Hours with Dean Ryan as we get into the silent regrets and then springboard into whole other rabbit holes of the introspective kind. Stand by, and we'll be back after this quick break.
Next, here on Brighton Broadcast News, we're going to be joined by Dean Ryan from RealDealMedia.tv. But first of all, when did Madonna stop being human? That's my question. The last workup that she did, that's transhumanism right there. That's like, that's full-blown reptilian.
It's yeah. Like,
what happened to your face?
It's so bad. Even Cher said, you know what? That's a little too far.
You know, it's bad when Cher chimes in like that. But hey, you know, don't be afraid to age gracefully like a normal human being. There's nothing wrong with a few wrinkles, a little bit of gray hair. Yeah, I got some gray hair. You know, Who cares? You know, drink some smoothies, be healthy. You can age gracefully. You don't have to transform yourself into some creature.
Well, first of all, Mike's only 28 years old, but he's lived a hard life. That's why he has the white hair.
What are you talking about, me?
Yeah.
I'm only 28.
He's only 28, everybody. Right. He's lived a hard life, right. But that's why the white hair, but. Yes, Mike, you lived a hard life. Welcome back, everybody. I am Dean Ryan still. This is Real Deal Media's After Hours original series here as we have no agenda. We have no script, no limits, and no regrets, at least, that we can hear about as we're diving into the introspective souls of the nations out there and the individuals that make them just that. We're looking at the cliches, the backwards engineering of just exactly how we got to be these people who we are. You know, I was wondering to myself, what is the most happiest moment of childhood? And there are so many, I think it's hard to choose. That's why I can't think of any. And but there are just a good handful that I can name off right off the bat. And then I'm asking myself in the same breath, what is going to be the greatest, happiest moment of my adulthood within recent memory? But what is it going to be going forward? And these are the things I was thinking about. And what would that look like? And I'm curious to know out there, maybe some of you out there, what would be the happiest moment? Maybe it's a conclusion. Maybe it's the small things in life. What would that be for you? And maybe I'll share some of mine and we can show and share, if you will. And some of those, one of those for me would to be what Almost Life was like years back. And for me, that would be to have good people around me, to have good food in a community kind of ordeal. Because really dinner and the term breaking bread is really, that comes from the Indians and pilgrims kind of folklore. Yeah, so to break bread with people, to have good, healthy things, healthy food, but to just enjoy that moment, those moments, because the moments we've had those in between all of this, but it has been frantic. It's been filled with deadlines. It's been filled with blackouts, inflation, worrisome. The term tomorrow's never promised has never been more prevalent. And that, I mean, this must be what I would imagine like a wild animal in the safari would feel like. Let's just say ostrich, because that's what's come to mind. I mean, so if you're living in the African safari and you're just a wild giant, just animal, you could just be eaten just like that. And, you know, life goes on. But this is why, like, a lot of these animals are very skittish. And I can imagine, because in their ancestral beings, you know, they all died very terrible deaths and somebody ate them. And I imagine that's what it feels like being born now, if you will, but being alive now as well. So to rid that, for me, that is as simple as that and complex as it could be, to me, that would be ultimate happiness. Just to not have to worry about worrying, if that makes sense. How about yourselves out there? Don't be shy. Yes. Pete, who's on fire tonight? I just love. Thank you, Pete, for being here. That's a gene. We're all trapped in this depressing political world with all of its faults. And no one is having fun anymore. That's true. And what was the band feeling like? Okay, what was the band feeling like on the Titanic as the Titanic was sinking? They kept playing. I'm imagining they were like, well, we're going to die anyways. Let's play our best, lineup of tunes here before we just freeze to death in the Arctic. I'd imagine that's what they were thinking. And that's kind of how I feel at times. If we're going to go out, we're going to go out standing up, and we're going to go out doing what we love with you know, the music that we want to hear. You know, like, you ever thought about, like, what song do you want to hear if you ever, God forbid, get in a high-speed pursuit? You know, what song is that going to be? These are things I think about. So if that's the case, if our destiny, if our conclusion to this is total serfdom, meaning total FEMA camps or total, outer ends of society in a very just a shadow band kind of life, well, then we're going to do it on our own terms, but we're going to do it fighting, standing up with vitriol, with bravado, and complete enlightenment. and just make it as enjoyable as possible. That's how I see it. You know, that's how I see it. It's like, if I'm going to go to jail, if I'm going to prison, I'm bringing a big stack of Uno cards with me, my favorite CDs, my favorite blanket, my most finest pillow, and my favorite socks. You know, just if that's the fate, then we're going to do it on our terms. At least that very much we can attest to. Very, very similar to the film Braveheart, which is one of the finest films out there ever made. Mel Gibson really does have a very outer body connection to the human conditions, especially of years past. And that is a communication that cannot be pretty much verbalized when you understand what your ancestors went through in, you know, centuries past. And then you project that and illustrate that in a modern day. And it's not a science, but it's a true art form, and it's a blessing. It's very spiritual. Samantha Rick says, you cannot take anything with you to prison. Yes, Samantha, thank you very much. Yes, I know. I know that's true. It's the prison without the bar, the prison cells, the walls. It's the digital mental prisons that they're putting us into. Here's another one. Here we have Rebel Mama. As we're trying to, you know, what are things that you miss, but what are things that you're hoping in the future, I guess the inquiry would be, that is going to make you happy. It can be from the little things. You know, for me, I love, many people don't, I love having just my smokehouse almonds with me. My snacking is trivial as that may sound. Just those little things make me happy. If I don't have those, and I'm not very happy, and I get very, very sour, and then ultimately, you know, just very devilish. Rebel Mammoth says, thank you, Rebel Mammoth says, I miss my clients and my job. It was a competitive but so rewarding, turning a family vacation into the dream trip beyond the wildest dreams. Rebel Mammoth, thank you for sharing that with me. In another lifetime, I did think about, I would love to have been a travel liaison, if you will. Because to me, the greatest education you can ever give somebody, if not yourself, is a better understanding of this world and the people in it, is to travel this world. Because when you do, all of the dramas, all of the mishaps, all of the shortcomings and things that would make you depressed in your, you know, square radius where you might reside, that goes way behind you to the wayside. Because you're learning and you're experiencing new destinations. And the greatest thing my grandparents ever did for me was to get me and take me on all their travels from the very young age of 4. If I had it, I'd show you the picture of me as a 4-year-old in a tuxedo with spaghetti on my face as I fell asleep in it on a cruise ship. But that was the greatest thing, because it put the travel inclinations, the travel bug in me, to want to meet people, to want to understand people's cultures, to taste their cultures. You know, when you can taste people's cultural foods and drinks and everything, you're tasting history. When you're using extra virgin olive oil from Athens, Greece, you're tasting history of what was traded and regarded as a high priority and commodity that was traded around the world. And for that, I'm forever grateful, because now we have people here, all of us, from all over the world. And you know, if you think about it too, here, another question is, how many of you out there within the confines now here of Real Deal Media, as we approach our 4-year anniversary, how many of you have made some incredible friendships here that you'll forever be grateful for? And I know I have. And those things are what make me happy. Hearing those stories, experiencing those, is what I look forward to once we get over this hump. So thank you, Rebel Mammon, for sharing that. Oh, boy. Here's another one here. Somebody said no virgins left in Athens. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. It's always good to know. Well, cross that off, going to Athens. Here's another one here. We have Elizabeth Hudson. Thank you very much. Those Titanic musicians are us. Yes, they are. Yes, they are, Elizabeth. I always figured you for a fiddle player, I think. But very, very, very intuitive. Thank you very much. Here's another comment here. We have Beverly Clow saying, how can anyone feel peace when a group of consorts of Satan are pushing fear, poverty, violence, suffering? I, for one, want to see them stop living. Well, Beverly, now we know what's going to make you happy going forward. You're entitled to that, and I share a lot of that sentiment. So, we all have that inner grim reaper in us, don't we? And we should, because what society doesn't? You know what I mean? What hen house doesn't have a, you know, the cock of the walk, the rooster around that hen house? You can't. It can't function that way, but a very valid point. Thank you. Here's another one. We have Nigel Dyer, who says the following. He says, God gave us all what we need in the beginning, food, water, etc. Nigel, I'm curious what etc. What is Nigel's etc.? Anyways, I can. And knows how big the world population would be, but the evil trying to kill true life off by abortion, starvation, face, fear, facting, yes, fear factory, climate change, etc., and people are so gullible, dot, 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 etc. Yes, you are absolutely onto something. Here we have Melinda, who is usually on the money, and I think she will be again. She says, the downside of being awake is I don't have that ignorant optimism anymore. Well, let me give you some optimism. I'm going to do my best here to do that. The optimism is, so in this, actually, I don't know who said this. I think it was somebody from New Zealand, and they might be here tonight. So if this is your comment, just you fill me in. Somebody said to me the other day, how can America be 350 million strong and there's about roughly a million, per se, on the top of the pyramid chain here, just domestically speaking, that are controlling the 300 million? And I said, by Jove, Eureka. And it just made me think, because it goes really all the way back to Plato's cave. How could these people be so afraid of these shadow puppets? They never left the cave until one of the Neanderthals did and never went back. No one ever goes back. No slave who escaped the plantations in the old days never went back and said, you know what, I really miss picking this cotton and you know, churning the butter. And that's what it's all about. But the optimism is resistance, the fact that we're still able to do it. The optimism is that we're able to communicate and we're also able to share the experience and alert of what's ahead for some, and humble ourselves when we might be wrong on something or not exactly on the money, on the point, to then do that, because we have surrounded ourselves and discovered all these new people in this lifetime, this reality right now. And for that, if that is optimism, the fact that we're still able to breathe and get up and live, because that's surviving. And in the world of boxing, if you can survive the 8 rounds of hell and 10 rounds, I mean, you could watch the movie Rocky. That's a great illustration of it. It wasn't that he knocked out Apollo Creed and broke his jaw. It was the fact that he was able to continue to stand up and withhold the pain, the punishment, the attacks, and not falter and take a knee. And that was winning. So resistance, the resistance to peer pressure, when I was in junior high, when things started becoming a bit more adulthood and the dreams we had as children faded away a bit, it was resisting going with the crowd. It was resisting stapling my stupid forehead like that one kid back then. It was resisting, you know, being the cool kids who are now gothic and, you know, smoking in the boys' room and doing all that. That was, for me, as dim as that sounds, that was a victory in its own right, which I didn't realize until many, many decades later. So thank you, Melinda. Pete is who is really on my good side tonight. He said it's simple things like Dove dark chocolate, the almonds, the good music, the daily connection, friends. Yes, in the thrift store and the simple things. Yes, it is, Pete. It really is. Dark chocolate and almonds together is one of the greatest holy matrimonies ever unionized in this country, and in life and together. That's how I feel. Anyways, very good point. I love chocolate. In fact, I can't live without chocolate. In this time, I need chocolate. Cheese. I mean, it's those things that we take for granted. When you don't have them, they're like, oh, my God. Here's another one. Here's Patricia Ellis. Thank you, Patricia, as we're kind of winding down here. Dean, I loved a charmed childhood, she says. I love intelligent parents who showed me love and respect even when I was young. We had adult conversations with my opinions and thoughts given credence. I had lots of freedom to explore my world because they trust me to do what was right. Love, trust, listening, and conversations are extremely important. Thank you, Patricia Ellis. That is one of the most beautiful comments I've read in quite some time. You know, there's a book I'm formatting currently, and it's called Conversations of My Grandparents. And when we think about those conversations of that Great Depression era, that generation, when we were younger, we just said, oh, okay, yeah, okay, Grandma, yeah, yeah. Don't take more food than you can eat on your plate. Don't forget to brush your teeth. All these just common, you know, knowledge kind of attributes. Well, how valuable, how prevalent are those statements, those conversations with our grandparents? How prevalent are those today? Because that's true tradition. That is true. It's almost spiritual in a way. Something so simple is so it's very pragmatic in a way, but it's also epic, because when there's none of that, then that means everything in the world. And you know, I've shared this before. One of my biggest regrets was that I stopped going to church with my grandparents, honestly, because it wasn't just the church ordeal, which, you know, when I stopped, it was all the scandals in the Catholic Church. So, you know, you're a teenager, screw the system. But it was those missed opportunities of the conversations, of the experience, and the bonding, because the bond is so important. And looking back now, I wish I would have had those poignant conversations that Patricia was speaking about. I wish I would have asked, you know, Grandma, like, you know, were you ever aspiring to be, you know, a fashion designer, because she always drew, you know, clothes and what have you, or just, you know, what were your dreams? And I wish I would have asked those questions. I wish I would have asked, what was it like, you know, surviving World War II and all those things. And I really do. So it's the conversations, as you said, that make the tradition and make life worth living. And to have that here tonight with all of you is truly, it really is very valuable and very appreciative. Anyways, there's so many wonderful comments. And Liz Marchand, thank you very much. The show has kept me going for over 3 years now. So grateful for you, Dean, and the amazing people I interact with. Very special times in my life now. Liz Marchand, it's been a blessing and a real pleasure to share this with you. And we're going to have more of those kind of very wonderful kind of sentiments as we get closer to March 19th. Let me go to Rumble real quick before we hit the road, Jack. Okay. Wow, it is wild over there. Here's Angelina Wolf here. Thank you. We say only here, Dean. People harass me for comments I make on social media, usually. Really mean people out there. I've never been able to open up to anyone before. And thank you, Angeline, for sharing that. And, you know, I wouldn't know really what that feels like in a sense, but what I mean by that is I hope that, you know, when we go back to where we started here, shows that what you put out is what people then become, in a sense. If there is nothing but vitriolic, just piss and vinegar, and that's the kind of climate you have, then that's the kind of people that will live in that climate. If you have, you know, if you live in Alaska, well, the people that live there just like the cold, you know, they like snow, not the people from, you know, the Sahara Desert. So I would hope that this is an environment that is comfortable for people, because I know that's how I would like it, or I do like it. So thank you for that. All right, I have to get out of here, everybody. I got a film to make still, just about to finish with. So many comments. How do I leave? Wonderful comments here. Gail Douglas, you're so right. I am grateful for being amazing people. I'm grateful for all of you. And I'm trying to think of some very special things I'd like to do for our anniversary for all of you out there. I'm really putting my head together, surprises and what have you. And here's a great, I'm going to end on this comment here. This is from Danny Grinstead. You want to talk about survival. You want to talk about never giving up. Because, you know, the person that birthed us didn't give up, right? They didn't give up. So I owe it to them. Here's a wonderful comment in our last comment. Danny Grinstead says, I spent my life in a boxing ring. Nearly died three times in the last 20 years. 5 years in a wheelchair after breaking half the bones in my body, high-speed motorbike crash, then survived cancer, then blocked arteries. I'm not afraid of death, as I've faced it many times. I know I have the maker in my corner. Danny, thank you for sharing that, and what a wonderful comment to end on. So if there's a takeaway here tonight, is that there is hope, and there is pleasure and creativity and light at the end of the tunnel, but it's just you have to look at it through a different angle that is very foreign to us, but won't be for much longer. And that's what makes me happy. That's what keeps me going. And those silent regrets become even more and more silent, because when you know you're doing the right thing, you don't have to tell yourself. You just feel it inside and you keep on doing it. So on that note, I want to thank all of you out there for sharing this wonderful return to form here for After Hours, one of our most celebrated shows, critically acclaimed. As we end our episode, I will be back soon, perhaps tomorrow. So for all of us here at Real Deal Media, I'm Dean Ryan. So thank you for sharing your After Hours thoughts with all of us here tonight. Never forget to stay tuned and stay awake. Good night, everybody. Thank you.